Okay, everybody, it's time once again for yours truly, after having just gone through a little familiar Jimmy Buffett tune I suspect most of you recognized out there, you parrot heads, you. And it was sort of an interesting and I think rather apropos lead-in to tonight's topic, which is going to be eating disorders and disordered eating, which are obviously not necessarily one and the same. One can have a disordered eating pattern or dysfunctional or self-defeating eating pattern and still not be classified as a quote-unquote eating disorder per se. You'll notice if you look in your infamous DSM, a document which we've talked about many times on our podcast before, the eating disorders fall kind of into two what I would call sort of age categories. Ones are the eating disorders that happen typically first evidenced as children, infants, and even teenagers. And those typically involve things like pica, and I'm not talking about the font on an old school typewriter, for those of you who did that kind of deal, or rumination disorder, or feeding disorder of infancy or early childhood. And just to quickly talk about those just briefly so they won't feel left out and, you know, have to pitch a temper tantrum. Pica is the eating of non-nutrient substances such as dirt or paper clips or whatever. Rumination disorder is basically when you barf and I don't mean to be rude or gross, and sort of eat the things that you just barfed up. That's lovely, isn't it? And the feeding disorder of infancy or early childhood could encompass a bunch of things, including like the ridiculously uber picky eaters or folks who don't need anything or starve or whatever. We're going to really talk about the more common adult versions of eating disorders, which most of you, I think, are very familiar with. And it's true that most of the two that we're going to talk about predominantly are also typically diagnosed in adolescents, particularly with adolescent females. They are certainly not the only folks who have these eating disorders. Males do and can get eating disorders, and specific types of males are more susceptible to that than males in the general population. And for those of you who don't know, we're talking about a certain group of athletes, such as jockeys, who are notoriously eating disordered. They almost have to be for their profession. It's almost a bona fide job qualification, because as I think most of you may know, and I may have even mentioned this in an earlier podcast, you can't weigh very much and be a jockey, because it puts too much strain on the horse. And previously, I think jockeys could not weigh more than something like 117 or 119 pounds, and I'm not joking. And these are guy jockeys, well, anybody, but you know, jockeys are particularly usually males. And over the last, I think, 10 years or so, the organization that governs this sort of thing, and I'm sorry I don't know the name of it, raised the ceiling to something like 125 pounds or 127 or something because of all the huge amounts of health problems that the jockeys were having as they got older. But still, I mean, if you think about it, you know, 5'5" guy weighing 125 pounds, I mean, that's like holy moly skinny. So male models are also obviously susceptible to this kind of thing, as are female models. Swimmers, male and female. Gymnasts, male and female. Cheerleaders, dancers, wrestlers, the male wrestlers are probably second to the jockeys in terms of incidence of eating disorders. And I jokingly once was working with a couple of guys in the same team and joked with them that that was their second team sport, and they sort of giggled and went, yeah, I think you're right. I'm like, duh. And sadly, a lot of the coaches unknowingly reinforced that behavior when they wanted to cut weight or up weight in a very, very short period of time, because a wrestler in a higher weight class or a lower weight class got injured, and so they want to move their guy into the weight class because they think he's going to be able to defeat the wrestlers that are competing in this particular meet. And so oftentimes wrestlers have to drop and or gain weight very, very quickly. And this is uber unhealthy to your body. But anyway, male wrestlers have a really high eating disorder rate. So if you work with a lot of athletes, as I have done in the past, you see a lot of guys who are eating disordered. And a lot of times what you'll see is the eating disorders will follow them into adulthood long after they've stopped competing, such that there was a person I worked with who was in his upper 30s, a male individual, who was eating disordered, who had been a former gymnast or wrestler, I don't remember which, and was continuing his weight loss behaviors as an adult, married with kids and the whole nine yards. And when one of his kids caught him doing eating disordered behaviors in the bathroom and then started emulating him, the gentleman wisely decided it was time to really attack this problem and get the heck out of Dodge as far as eating disorder is concerned. So that was kudos to him for doing that. But eating disorders can follow one way into adulthood, so they're not relegated to adolescent females, although that's certainly a very large group of folks that have the eating disorders and are certainly overly represented in the eating disordered population. If you take out the models and the gymnasts and the swimmers and the wrestlers and the jockeys out of the population, take the athletic aspect out of the population, eating disorders are almost completely the purview of females, with the exception of the models, as I said. And while it's not a quote-unquote sport, it's sort of an unusual, not a typical occupation, so to speak, for guys. And I'm not knocking it or anything. It's great. I wish I looked good enough to be a model. But that ain't going to happen in this lifetime in anybody's delusional imagination. So I both envy those guys and feel sorry for some of them in the sense that you know, their job is completely dependent on their physique, and you know, it takes a lot to hold that stuff up. And same thing with a lot of the porn stars. And again, I'm not advocating pornography. I'm not slamming pornography. I'm just saying, if you are a porn star, obviously you can't have a crappy body, with very few exceptions. And we can all call up some names of people going, "Are you kidding me? This gal's making how much money? Or this guy's making how much money?" You know, but in general, if you're a porn star and you're doing risque movies or whatever, you've got to be in really good shape. And that takes that nasty four-letter word that most of you have heard me use many times before. Oh no, not the obscene word work. Yes, I'm afraid so, boys and girls. It takes a boatload of work. So a lot more work than I'm willing to put into it. And so more power to these guys and gals who do that. So to get to the two eating disorders that everybody out there probably has heard of, and some of you probably are more familiar with than others, either because you've either had it or known someone that's had it. The two biggies are anorexia nervosa and bulimia nervosa. And then, of course, we have this you know, infamous NOS that you folks have heard me talk about so many times, the eating disorder not otherwise specified. That's what NOS means. And this is sort of an eating disorder that doesn't fit neatly in either of the two aforementioned eating disorders, but which have maybe characteristics that don't quite fulfill the full eating disordered criteria, or they have elements of both, or whatever. So you get the infamous NOS classification. So let me talk about the two disorders, because anorexia and bulimia nervosa both have you have to specify which types because there are little subtypes under it. So as most of you know, anorexia is a condition where folks perceive themselves to be a whole lot fatter than they really are, a whole lot larger than they really are. And as a result of that, they have this distorted body image and refuse to maintain sort of a minimal, normal, quote-unquote, average body weight for their height and their age, which in the DSM is defined as failing to maintain a body weight that's at, you know, 85% of that which you would expect somebody of that nature to have. You have most of these folks have an intense fear of gaining weight or becoming fat, even if they're underweight. The disturbance is has a really bad influence on a person's view of themselves, and they have a very distorted view of how their body really, really looks. So you can show them what they look like in a mirror, and they'll deny that that's them, or they'll say, "Oh yeah, look at me! I'm just so fat, I can't stand it." And literally, their skin is hanging off of their skeletal frame, almost like, you know, a concentration camp victim or something. And folks who, females who are in their menstrual time of life, so to speak, they will often have the absence of at least three consecutive menstrual cycles. That's called amenorrhea for you technical folks out there. And then you have the restricting type in which people basically, it's exactly what it sounds like. They self-induce vomit, or they use laxatives or diuretics or enemas to get rid of excess stuff, and they hugely restrict the number of calories and the type of food. And these folks will take like the diaries from hell. I mean, they'll note how many sips of water they take, and I'm not joking. I mean, it's really amazing. Or you have the binge eating purging type. And so these are folks who, after they've denied themselves food, they go on this binge eating craze and will eat just all kinds of stuff, you know, in a very, very, very short period of time. We're talking, you know, 5,000-6,000 calories, most of it being crappy calories, and then feel sick as heck, and then purge, vomit, cause themselves to vomit, or laxatives or diuretics or whatever to get rid of all of it. And then there's this huge guilt component on top of that that ensues about what a weak person they are and how awful and terrible they are, and their self-esteem is just really, really bad. Then you have the bulimics, the bulimia nervosa folks. And these are folks who have episodes of binge eating. So they'll have a discrete time period, say an hour, 2 hours, or whatever, and they'll eat a whole bunch of food, a whole lot more than most folks would eat in that same given time period. And they have a sense of no control, you know, kind of like the old Eddie Money song. They got no control over their eating during this time. So once they start, they can't stop. They just continue to eat until the bag of potato chips are gone or whatever they're eating. So then they have recurrent compensational behaviors such as, again, laxatives like the anorexics do, or diuretics, or vomiting, purging. Use other kind of medications, or they'll do excessive fasting, or sometimes they'll do excessive exercising. The anorexics will do that too. And we're not talking about, you know, bodybuilder guys or gals or models who go in for 3 or 4 hours a day to tone up and then, you know, eat normally or whatever. And these are guys and gals that are doing just crazy exercises almost nonstop. The binge eating and or the inappropriate compensational type behaviors usually occur at least twice a week on average for a 3-month period at least. And again, like the anorexics, the bulimics have these very skewed self-evaluation that's influenced by their body shape that they perceive to be very horrible. So their whole self-esteem is based on their body image, just like the anorexics do. And this disturbance, this bulimia episodes don't occur exclusively during episodes of anorexia, so they can be concurrently existing. So yeah, then you have the purging type of bulimia nervosa, which again, they do the periods of binge eating and then they purge. And then occasionally you have the folks that don't purge, which are the non-purging types, and these are the guys that will do the fasting and the exercise crazy schedules, but they won't necessarily on a regular basis do enemas or vomiting or laxatives or that kind of stuff. Okay. Now, the whole thing boils down to you've got folks who are just really wreaking havoc on their insulin levels, hypoglycemic levels. This kind of thing does really huge amounts of damage, particularly if you're vomiting, causing yourself to vomit. Because what will happen is a lot of the acids, of course, that the stomach starts to secrete to digest the foods that the person has just eaten are still sitting there, and then those, of course, all come up when the person vomits, and so they have all these acids that are bathing their larynx and vocal cords and all this kind of stuff, and that's why you'll sometimes see holes essentially burned into their larynx and all kinds of nasty chemicals oozing out into different parts of their body where they don't belong. And I don't want to get gross or disgust anybody, but I mean, this is a really, really, really serious condition. It also, as you can probably imagine, wreaks a lot of havoc on the body's electrolytes and firings of neurons, both in the brain and elsewhere. So that, you know, obviously if you're jacking your body up and down on a constant basis, you're really dysregulating all kinds of biological systems. And with the anorexics in particular, if they start to really starve themselves, and they do a lot of this over a long period of time, which most of them do unless they are caught earlier or hospitalized and force-fed. Some of them have to be literally strapped to a hospital bed and be fed by IVs, glucose, or food or whatever. And these folks will do all kinds of crazy stuff to get out of that stuff and pull the feeding tubes out of their veins and stuff. Just, it's really crazy stuff. If you've never seen it, it's really frightening. Thankfully, I've never had to hospitalize an eating disorder folk that I've worked with, but I'm uber micromanaging of these people, and really, if they're folks living with their parents or with a partner or spouse or whatever, I'm doing frequent calls and doing check-ins and getting the partners and spouses and parents to be uber nosy and kind of check in with these folks, because, I mean, you can't really be too careful. I mean, you just can't, because these people literally die from this stuff if it goes unchecked. The other thing that they'll often die from are things like heart conditions, because one of the things that the body does at some point, particularly the anorexics, is if they starve themselves or not, then the body begins to metabolize tissue of its own making. In other words, it begins to cannibalize itself. So the eating disorder literally becomes an eating disorder. The body literally starts to eat itself in order to get nutrients to feed specific organs. And one of the things that it does is, of course, it starts to eat heart tissue, because that's some of the softest tissue and easiest to metabolize in the body. So it's no wonder that folks have heart conditions. And of course, with the electrolytic patterns being really jacked out of shape, that also adds to all kinds of conductance problems and heart valve issues and all this kind of stuff. So these can become really serious disorders that are in literal terms life-threatening and life-ending. So they're pretty serious when you see them. You don't want to muck around with these things. I'm not talking about somebody who goes on a diet, you know, to get into a swimsuit for the summer and then goes, you know, oh, the hell with this. I'll go back and, you know, eat my potato chips or whatever at the end of the summer and gets kind of chunky and goes, okay. You know, or somebody that loses weight to get in a tux or a wedding dress because they want to look nice for their formal or their wedding or their engagement party or whatever. These people do this usually starting out fairly early, and it's a pattern that they continue. So if you see the wrestlers or the gymnasts or the swimmers or whatever doing it, the models doing it or whatever, it's a pretty pervasive pattern. And, you know, I've run into a lot of folks in college who will do it, and they'll say, oh, I'm kind of chunky, or I started out losing weight, and then I lost weight, and I got into college, and I wanted to maintain my shape, and I wanted to be able to compete, you know, with my peers in terms of dating and, you know, that sort of stuff. And I'll just do this through college and I'll quit after college. And they really mean it, But they're fooling themselves. Most of these folks can't stop because, you know, what you practice, which practice you get really, 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 really good at. You know, it's, and I think most of you folks have heard me say this on a prior podcast, one of my favorite characters, Cicero, the famous Roman orator, once said, nothing is stronger than tradition. And part of what he meant by that was things that you practice become very, very easy for the body to do and the mind to do, and so they become habitual. And as I often like to joke with my folks, things that become habitual become habitch to stop doing. So habits, you know, bad habits die hard, as the band Accept might say in one of their songs. And it is, they're good habits are good and they die hard too, but, you know, nobody bitches about those. It's the bad habits that get folks into trouble. Yeah. So if you have somebody that you know who you suspect is developing an eating disorder or already has a full-blown eating disorder, you really need to try and find a way to convince them to come clean about it and to get some help for it. You know, and if you're a friend, you can sit and talk with them. Please don't be afraid to, you know, approach your friend about it. I mean, obviously, you don't want to go up to somebody and say, you know, dude, you got a frickin' bulimia problem, right? You need to be a little more, you know, appropriate than that. Even I'm more appropriate than that, and I'm pretty blunt about stuff. You know, but I tell people, anytime you say anything like that, you say it with the intention of love. You say it with the intention of helping someone. You're not slamming them. You're there to help them. You know, and think about yourself. If you had one of these eating disorders, you know, what would you want somebody to do for you, and how would you want somebody to approach you about this thing, right? And you can't often use reason and say, well, look in the mirror, because as I've mentioned before, a lot of these guys and gals have very, very distorted body views, and they really have this very dysmorphic, this unrealistic view of their body. And I think I've shared with a lot of you folks out there in a prior podcast, but if I haven't, then this is a really good time to share it. I often share it with my eating disorder clients. When I was a kid, I was very, very sick, and at some point in my late childhood, early preteen years, because I was on so much medication, my metabolism just said, see ya, and it just shut down, and I put on a boatload of weight. And so by the time I was 14, I weighed 230 pounds and had a very, very waist and couldn't get the fat and the excess weight off no matter what I did. And I went on all kind of crazy diets and did all kind of crazy exercises, and it didn't really matter. And I never have eaten. I've always had a very slow metabolism, and I've never eaten more than a couple of meals a day. And by the time I was 14 or 15, I was down to one meal a day because I just wasn't hungry. And it wasn't a sense of, okay, I'm going to starve myself and lose weight, but I just really wasn't hungry. And, you know, people go, oh, well, what'd you do? You one meal a day. You started at 8 o'clock in the morning and ate till, you know, 8 o'clock at night. No. First of all, as most of you know, I have a sleep disorder, so I don't get up at 8 o'clock in the morning. but even when I get my vampire butt out of bed, I don't eat food. I mean, to this day, I still only eat one major meal a day, and that's at night. Now, I do a protein shake, which is technically a meal, when I get out of bed, and it has a lot of nutrients and electrolytes and aminos in it in order to give my body and my brain something to work on. Otherwise, I'd be in a whole hell of a lot of trouble. And I do vitamins with my primary meal at night, and they're all megadose organic vitamins, time-release stuff, and yada, yada, yada. At any rate, at some point, when I healed myself from being sick after being written off by the medical profession and being told I was going to be sick and fat the rest of my life, and they were a lot nicer than that, but that was the bottom line, right? And I got on a holistic / alternative medicine regimen of vitamins and protein shakes and stuff. And I stopped being sick first, and everybody said, oh, it's, you know, all in your head. And I'm like, if I'm saving $30,000 a year and not missing exams and not missing gigs and playing out, you know, and not feeling like ass all the time, I'll take placebo effect, right? So about 3 or 4 years later, my pants fell off running to class. That was a whole lot of fun. Taking a shortcut through the women's dorm, too, that was a whole lot of fun, right? I'm sure they got a big hoot out of that one. True story. No joke. And this went on for a couple of years until I finally realized I was losing weight because I was in denial that I was losing weight. I mean, you know, it's like, how can you be in denial of losing weight? Well, this ties back to what I was going to say earlier about the eating disordered folks. You know, you show them a mirror and say, look, you know, you're freaking skinny as hell. What the hell? You need to put on weight. You don't need to lose weight. They're not going to see that. They're going to look in a mirror and see a very distorted body image, okay? So for many years, I was like, oh, no, I'm not losing weight. My pants are getting bigger because I'm washing them with weird detergent. And I'm really serious. Guys, I'm not kidding. I'm really, really not kidding, right? And Mr., you know, IQ boy, you know, with the gifted IQ, is like, no, my pants are getting bigger because I'm using crappy detergent, right? Okay, well, genius boy, your belts aren't getting bigger. How come your belts don't fit anymore? Okay, you're having to buy new belts or stick holes in the old ones. I mean, come on. But, I mean, you know, denial is not a river in Egypt, let me tell you, okay? and so finally, when I got on the scales, because I would never weigh, because I always knew what I weighed. I weighed 130 pounds, 127 pounds. I'm like, ah, I mean, I'm sorry, 230 pounds, 227 pounds. That was a misspeak. Sorry, guys and gals. I was like, oh, no. You know, I don't want to see this shit, right? So I got on a scale and weighed, you know, like 187. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm dying. You know, I've got cancer, you know, and I'm running to the physicians getting checked out. And right. So anyway, the moral of the story is I've ended up with down to 175 with no diet, no exercise, no nothing, just doing the organic vitamins and healthy stuff that I was doing. And then a buddy of mine who was unfortunately, he was a really, you know, good bodybuilder guy, but unfortunately also a cocaine addict and a roid rat and a alcoholic, but that's another story, got me into the gym, and I will forever be grateful to him for doing that and got me started working out to get my cardiovascular back because that's where most of my problems were, my illnesses were. And as I got into the gym and toned up and started changing some of the eating habits I had and started looking at stuff, and my taste buds actually changed the healthier I got. And I know that sounds weird, but they really do. I eventually got down to about 140, 145, and that's where I've been forever and a day. And the moral of the story is not to tell you what a great success my, you know, vitamins and stuff were, but to say that to this day, which I still maintain that weight, I still, you know, work out regularly and this sort of thing, I look in a mirror and see a very distorted body image of myself. Now, I don't limit what I eat. If I feel like, you know, chocolate cake, I eat chocolate cake. If I, you know, I don't, thank God, very often, but there's occasions when I do. There's occasions when I want pizza with everything on it and all kind of crappy food that's just horrible for your body, and I just go, screw it, I'm doing it, okay? It's once a month, it's once every 3 months, what the heck ever. Just, you know, go pound sand and leave me the hell alone, right? I don't do it very often, and typically I have a pretty good diet, and thank God I really like good-for-you foods for the most part. So, you know, this is a good thing for me, and I'm fortunate in that regard. But I still look in the mirror today, and I see a 230-pound person in that mirror. Now, the difference is I see that from an emotional, internal part. I don't, you know, my intellect, my cognitive skills go, dude, okay, people don't have 33-inch waists if they weigh 230 pounds unless they're 7 feet tall. And I'm not, okay? Trust me, guys and gals, I'm like 5'10", okay? So, you know, most people that see me classify me as thin or fit, and I'm like, oh, and I hear that, and it's like somebody kind of sticks an electric socket up my wazoo, and I'm kind of like, ooh, you know, because I really, it's like, oh, and then I have to go, okay, dude, shut up, and thank them for being nice, you know. But, so my standing joke with my eating disordered folks is, what's the difference in you and me, right? And the answer is, I know it's crazy, right? So I look in the mirror, and I feel like, and I think I look like I'm a fat piece of you-know-what, and I'm disgusting and gross and all this other kind of stuff that is not very desirable. And I really believe it on an emotional level. On a cognitive level, I know it's crazy. And so I don't do the stuff that they do. And the only difference between me, because that's a body dysmorphic disorder, that's a distorted body image, but the difference and the reason I don't have any disorders, because I know it's nuts, I'm not going there, right? I need more problems, like I need 10 more inches of hair. And trust me, folks, I don't need 10 more inches of hair. Okay, I have plenty. Thank God. Having lost this, I've gotten older, and that's a really good thing. Let me tell you. So, you know, the joke is, but it's not really a joke, what's the difference in you and me when I'm working with an eating disorder person? And they'll say, I don't know, what's the difference? You're skinny and I'm not. And I'm like, no, that's the wrong answer, because we're, you know, we're both skinny, and I know that intellectually, and I kind of have to, you know, I can't get that out hardly, because I don't really believe it emotionally, but I know it's true cognitively. But at any rate, the answer is no, I know it's crazy. I believe the same thing you believe on an emotional level that you still believe on a cognitive level, right? And they're like, oh no, but you're skinny. And I'm like, uh-huh, and your point is what? You know, so you can't be logical with these folks in the sense of they're not going to believe it, because their perception is based on their self-image, which is distorted, like mine is. The difference is they don't know it's distorted, they don't know it's crazy, they're not willing to accept it's crazy, okay? So you really have to talk with them and kind of, you know, encourage them and as much as you can, and befriend them as much as you can. And if you're really scared for them, you know, I tell people the same thing I tell them if they think one of their friends is serious about killing themselves: go to somebody and rat on them. And I know that sounds horrible, but you're saving a life. You might be saving a life here, right? We're not talking about breaking a promise and a trust. We're talking about saving somebody's life. That's different than going to Johnny's mom and going, hey, Mrs. Smith, did you know Johnny is still hanging out with that girl you didn't want him to hang out with, or that boy you didn't want him to hang out with, or, you know, whatever, right? We're not talking about that, okay? That's uncool. But saving somebody's life is probably the coolest thing you'll ever do, right? So you need to look at these things as very, very serious disorders, because they are. Eating disorders often accompany other disorders, and vice versa. So it's not uncommon to see somebody with an eating disorder, particularly if it's long-standing, to have an anxiety or a depression disorder along with it. Well, duh. Most of your borderline personality disordered folks have eating disorders as kids. It's kind of that and the cutting are sort of the, like, ding, 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 red flags that you might, you know, it's kind of like, what's his name goes, you might be a redneck, you know, Jeff Foxworthy, you might be a redneck if, well, you might be a borderline if, right? You have an eating disorder as a kid, and you do cutting, and you're a drama queen or a drama king, all right? Bad, bad combo. Bad, bad, bad combo. So you want to get help with these folks, and there's all kinds of ways to do that in terms of treatment, cognitive behavioral being the most commonly used, and I'm not going to go into great detail about that, but whatever you do, you want to refer them to somebody who knows eating disorders, not some just general schlepper, but somebody who knows eating disorders, all right? And I tell people, you know, call up your local, you know, look online, call up your local, you know, counselor organization or psychology organization or psychiatry organization or social work or whatever, and look for somebody who specializes in eating disorders or who has had a lot of experience with eating disorders, right? And it's the same with anything. If you have a serious life-threatening issue going on, or you have kind of an unusual syndrome going on, you want to get the best person you can. And if they're not on your so-called insurance plan, your managed care plan that I prefer to call mangled care, because that's what the hell it is. To quote Neil Peart, you don't get something for nothing, you don't get freedom for free, you don't get wise with the sleep still in your eyes, no matter what your dream might be. So there's no free lunch, okay? This national health care crap, and excuse me for those who are in favor of that, but there ain't no free lunch, right? Somebody else is paying the bill. And if you have a mangled care plan, particularly some of these chintzy ones like the HMOs, as opposed to a PPO is a better mangled care plan than an HMO in general, because one makes you go in network and will not allow you to, won't pay anything for somebody who's out of network, and that's the HMO. And the PPO will allow you to see somebody out of network, and sometimes they pay more actually than they do for in network, sometimes they pay less. Best thing to do is look on the back of insurance card and call them and ask them when in doubt, okay? But you don't care if they're in plan or not, honestly, because you're talking about being dollar, you know, penny wise and life foolish. Now, if you've got a serious disorder, you don't want to go to Joe Blow or Jolene Blow because she or he is on your insurance plan, unless they are really top-notch people. And let's be honest, folks, why would you sell yourself short? If you're really good at what you do, why would you sell yourself short and go for a mangle care plan. Because I don't know if any of you guys or gals out there know how this stuff works, but it's really insidious. Because what they do is you contract with the insurance company, and they basically tell you what they'll pay and what they won't pay. And if you do a procedure like psych testing, for example, which most of them don't pay for, and you bill them, they'll refuse to pay it because that falls outside of their services that they provide. And you agree when you sign in to be one of their special providers. I knew you could. You agree not to charge the client or the subscriber to the service anything that the insurance company doesn't pay for. So it's a racket with these people, and they pay you anywhere from 2/3 to half of what you're really worth, right? So that's why I'm on none of these insidious, what I call pigs to the public hog trough plans. I just think it's horrible. And, you know, I know that there's folks out there that have to have those because regular insurance, so-called indemnity insurance, which is almost, you know, gone extinct these days, but any kind of insurance is pricey out the wazoo. And I know that there are folks who just can't afford it. And I get that. And I'm not slamming them. And I'm not slamming anybody with one of these plans because a lot of times you work for a company and you don't have a frickin' choice. The company contracts with these people who promise to save the company money by providing mass quantities of service, right? And so you're just stuck with one of these things. So I am not slamming the consumer in any way, shape, or form, but I am trying to educate you guys and gals because you can go back to your organization and lobby those people who sign the contracts for these plans to say, we want a better plan. This plan sucks, okay? So that's my little, 15 minutes of anti-insurance dillies. But at any rate, if you have a condition, whatever it is, and it's really serious, you want to go to somebody who knows their cookies. You don't want to go to somebody who's on your plan if they don't have extreme expertise and training and knowledge of these various syndromes, whether it's ADHD, whether it's bipolar disorder, whether it's schizophrenia, whether it's borderline personality disorder, or whether it's an eating disorder. Right, you just don't want substandard service. And there's a lot of people out there doing substandard service, in my personal opinion. So I'm getting off my soapbox. Thank you for listening. I just think you guys need to be informed because the public is so uninformed about this stuff. It just really torques my agates to see people having half-assed treatment when they come into my office. And I see that a whole lot more than I see the reverse, let me tell you. But as I said at the beginning of this podcast, one can have really horrible eating habits without having an eating disorder. And if any of you haven't seen it, there's a 3 or 4 part series, and I don't remember if it's on one of the pay channels. I don't remember if it's Showtime or HBO or Cinemax or whatever. It's on one of them pay channels up there, and it's called The Weight of America. And if you haven't seen it, you need to see it. It is a really, really professionally done, and I promised I'm not getting a kickback from these guys, okay? I won't be getting any compensation checks in the mail next week. It's an incredibly kick-butt program, 4-part documentary with some very, very astute folks talking about the seriousness of America's horrid eating habits that are leading to obesity, which is now becoming our number one health problem in America because of all the other health problems that it engenders, such as heart conditions, strokes, high blood pressure, hypoglycemia, diabetes, yada yada. It's just really, quote Mr. Mackey, it's bad kind. So if you haven't seen that program, it's done really, really well. I advise everybody on the planet to see that program, even if you're in the best shape of your life. It's really, really good, and they really have great ideas and awesome information on there for folks. I was thoroughly enthralled with it. So if you're one of these folks that doesn't have the best of eating habits, and let's face it, guys and gals, I don't know of anybody, including me, obviously, since I'm a body, I don't know anybody who can't stand to improve their eating habits, right? Most of us eat way too much food at one sitting, particularly as Americans. And I'm talking about Americans now. I'm not talking about Europeans or Asians or Mediterraneans or whatever. I'm talking about us Americans. And we as Americans typically eat the wrong foods at the wrong time of day and too much of them. And even if we're eating the right foods, you know, you can eat all these great, you know, monounsaturated fats, you know, the olive oil and the canola oil, the so-called good fats, the fish, you know, the the cod and the salmon and all these fish that have all these great omega-3 oils in them. But, you know, if you eat a ton of them, you're going to gain weight. And, you know, a little bit of oil is a good thing, of the good oil is a good thing, but too much of the good thing is too much of a good thing, right? So we in America have a tendency to overdo stuff. And I don't know if that's because, you know, we're dumb about eating. I don't know why that is. I'm not going to conjecture. I think it's probably a polyphony of things. But the bottom line is we do it and we need to quit doing it. And the other thing we typically do is we get insufficient amounts of supplements and in our diets and that sort of thing, partially because we eat the wrong food, right? And a lot of our forefathers, you know, if you look at some of the writings of Edison and Ben Franklin, some of these folks, I mean, they talk about using, you know, nature as medicine. And these guys were not dummies. So maybe we should be listening to these folks, right? So one of the things I really do, and this is not just with eating disordered folks, but with folks, you know, with a plethora of psych issues and emotional stuff, I really like to get them on vitamin supplements. I like to get them on herbal stuff. And again, I'm not an herbalist. I'm not a physician. I'm not a chiropractor. I'm not a dietitian. So I'm just going to be talking in generalities. I advise all my folks to really talk to and consult with their primary physician before doing any of this stuff. And if you don't have a holistic or alternative medicine person or alternative healer person, whether that person be a, you know, herbalist or nutritionist or dietitian or whatever, find somebody you trust who's knowledgeable about stuff and go to them. You know, it's not a bad thing. And I can tell you that oftentimes when I'm working with eating disordered folks, I often work in conjunction with dietitians and nutritionists. And that's one of the ways I keep these folks out of the hospital. I think I've said I've never had to hospitalize eating disorder ever. Came close one time, really close, but I had a lot of parental support, and the so-called quote-unquote patient was very cooperative and really bright gal, and, you know, and it worked out really, really well. But, you know, it was a touch and go there for the first couple of weeks, and I always like to line up as many different folks to monitor and to be part of the treatment team as possible. Foods have a lot of impact on our mood, on our attitudes about stuff. I mean, it's just really amazing, and I don't have time to talk about all that in here, but here's what I will talk about. Okay? If you're the typical American person, right, we eat way too much sugar and all kinds of simple carbohydrates. Sugar is a carbohydrate. It's a simple carbohydrate. And the simple carbs are generally the white things. So it's like white pastas, white bread, white rice, white sugar. Okay? So the rule of thumb is, unless it's, cauliflower or whatever the stuff is, I always get cauliflower and broccoli confused. Broccoli is the green stuff and cauliflower is the white stuff. Okay, got it. I have anomia problems, inability to remember names of things, objects, people, whatever, so I sometimes get names confused. So I apologize if I confuse anybody here with that. It's my own pathology, and please don't feel obligated to take it on. Okay, so, you know, barring that sort of thing, think of white as bad, okay, when you're eating starches or carbs, because generally those are the bad carbs. Better carbs are multigrains, whole foods, obviously, you know, whole wheat, that sort of thing. Unless, of course, you have a gluten intolerance or you have a celiac condition. And, you know, if you think you do, you have a wheat allergy or gluten, get that stuff tested. The most common allergy in America, on the last time I looked, was actually dairy products. And I think the second one, I think the second one was gluten and the third one was shellfish, but don't quote me on that. Things change, okay? But barring any of that kind of stuff, right, think about it, and I know you folks have heard me say this before, garbage in, garbage out. It's a famous computer quote, and it's true, to quote Madeline Kahn in Blazing Saddles, one of my favorite Mel Brooks movies of all time. You know, if you don't feed your brain adequately, it's not going to function adequately, and your brain functions on the food you put in your mouth, and, you know, things that you put in that get turned into biochemistry that feeds the neurons, right? Whether that's cocaine or whether that's sugar or whether that's codfish or kelp, okay? So food is a powerful drug, you want to be, you know, in the words of one of my heroes, very, very careful. You're hunting healthy foods. So you want to make sure that you're eating properly. I cannot overemphasize that enough. Most people, unless you have a FUBAR metabolism as I do, most people, they advise to eat, you know, 3 to 5 meals a day, space your stuff out. You want to avoid anything with uber sugar in it, right? Alcohol has sugar in it, by the way, in case you didn't know. Because these things can not only exacerbate a condition, they can bring stuff on, they can crash your body really, really badly. And particularly if you have a family history of some of this stuff like hypoglycemia, high blood pressure, diabetes, any of this kind of stuff, you really need to be uber careful, okay? So proper nutrition is absolutely vital. Absolutely vital to provide energy for your body and food for your brain so that you can think. So you, as many unrefined complex carbohydrates, if you're going to have carbs, right, you should limit the carbs in general, but if you're going to have them, the more complex unrefined you can get it, the more essential fats and high quality protein, particularly the monounsaturated fats, are just really, 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 really important. Also, if you can get the protein from non-red meat sources, your body digests those, tends to digest those better, right? Most people don't know it, but things like legumes, beans, have a whole lot of protein in them. Anything that's green, particularly really green, now lettuce is a sort of an exception because that's kind of a wimpy green, but I'm talking about things like kelp or Japanese seaweed or spinach. That stuff has got a lot of chlorophyll in it. And chlorophyll is one of the things that leads the body to energize in the cells, these group of energy-producing organisms inside the cells called mitochondria. And so you get to learn all this great trivia, right? Isn't this cool? Things you always wanted to know over a, you know, coffee cup sitting at the table sipping, hopefully decaf, right? Talking at your local coffee shop. And did you know about mitochondria? So... the chlorophyll, which is green, feeds the mitochondria, and so that's a good thing. You know, more mitochondria, more chlorophyll in the chloroplast to feed the energy-producing stuff, the better and higher energy you're going to have, right? Things like anxiety and stress and depression leach the body of nutrients. So does alcohol, by the way. So if you're going to do... you know, things to help yourself, use food and natural substances as much as possible. I mean, those of you who have, for example, a hard time sleeping, right? There's all, and again, I have one of these weirdo circadian rhythm sleep-wake cycle disorder, delayed phase shift variety, to be exact, that's inherited, it's incurable, yada, yada, yada. But I don't do things to exacerbate it. I don't drink, you know, caffeinated coffees hardly ever. I don't drink caffeinated teas, actually theophyllinated teas, because tea actually has theophylline, not caffeine in it. Which is a derivative of caffeine, but that's, I digress. You know, I try not to eat things that are going to keep me up. I don't engage in activities that are going to stimulate my brain, like playing guitar, you know, uber late at night. You know, I may play it for 30 seconds or a minute for these podcasts, but I'm not getting on there and going, wow, you know, I'm playing Jimi Hendrix on the, with the whammy bar there. So you want to be sure that you can do as much with food and minerals and natural herbs and as you can, right? So tryptophan, which is an amino acid, it's an essential amino acid, particularly with the help of vitamin Bs, particularly B6, helps produce things like synthesize things like serotonin, right? So if you have a depression, right, these things are going to help you do these, you know, turkey kind of things, bananas, green leafy vegetables, sesame seeds, avocado, pumpkin, these all have a lot of tryptophan in them, right? So you can do all kinds of things. You can obviously take tryptophan, you know, and melatonin supplies and all this kind of stuff. Or you can do kava kava, which is a great anti-anxiety stress reliever, or valerian root, which is a great stress reliever. But, you know, you can eat food and change your blood chemistry and your brain chemistry and do all kinds of stuff, but everything in moderation, right? use as high quality protein as you possibly can that includes a lot of amino acids. And there are generally, unless you're allergic to whey and soy products, that's the better protein stuff. And there's a couple of protein powders out there that are just really, really good, that have very, very low fat, have no excess sugar in them. So there's all kinds of stuff you can do. If you're going to do carbohydrates, do the complex carbs, right? Because they are processed more slowly. The body breaks them down over time. And so you have a steady energy as opposed to this jerky up and down roller coaster energy, right? Which are the refined carbs and the simple carbs. So they're quick sugar, but then you have quick crashes. So what do most people do? They do another carb, right? They do another donut, right? Learn to read labels. I cannot overemphasize that, right? Most people don't know how to read labels. If you don't, find somebody who does and get them to teach you. One of the things I do with my folks is I take them to the grocery store and say, okay, show me what you buy normally. Why do you buy it? What does the label say? Do you understand the label, right? And if they don't, I sit there and spend an hour or so with these guys going and gals going around the grocery store showing them what stuff is, teaching them about trans fats and hydrogenated fats. And for those of you who don't know, I know most of you by now know that trans fats are bad, right? What you don't know is hydrogenated fats turn into trans fats in your body. So you want to read the label. If it has partially or fully hydrogenated fats, put that little bad boy back on the shelf. And you will be shocked witless how many things have hydrogenated fats on them, including prefab pie shells, saltine crackers. A lot of them most of your manufacturers, in fact, have hydrogenated fats in those. Most of the crappy Cheetos and Tostitos, all those corn chips, all that stuff just has loads of horrible fats in it, right? You want good fats. You do not want bad fats, right? And as I said, the good fats are typically the monounsaturateds, right? You want to avoid excess stimulants, right? Cardiovascular exercise, some of the greatest stuff to both relieve stress and to help with depression. Right, it's a great dilly. If you also are overweight, or if you have, you know, a lot of bad stuff going on in your bloodstream, sweat that bad puppy out, get the blood flowing, get some new stuff going into your system. Right, there's all kinds of stuff you can do that's going to improve your mental status. Right, be sure and not eat really late at night, because if you eat really late at night, the body tends to store fat instead of burning fat during sleep. In case you didn't know that, right. Monitor your portions, you know, learn portion control. Some people will eat the right foods, but they just eat way too much of it, right? So learn portion control. It's very, very, very important. If you don't know these things, find somebody, whether they're a nutritionist or a dietary person or just, you know, an knowledgeable alternative medicine person or a holistic healer or whatever. Find somebody who knows their stuff. Read books. You know, there's plenty of books out there that you can get to talk about portion control. And I know a lot of you will go, well, gosh, I read all these crazy diets and all these crazy things, and one book tells me to do one thing and one book tells me to do something else. Yeah, I know. And find something that works for you. There are plenty of ways to finagle this thing, but find somebody who you trust, who's uber knowledgeable, get them to help you out, get them to recommend some books for you to read and some things for you to read, and then start working with it. It's a process, you know. A lot of people will say, oh, I just can't do it all at one time. Okay, do it slowly. All right, start decreasing your red meats that you eat and replace them with other things, right? You don't have to go cold turkey with this kind of thing. All right, some people do that and they do great. Other people need a slow incline on this thing. And there's nothing wrong with that, right? Any improvement is better than no improvement. So if all you're doing is cutting out all the simple carbohydrates out of your diet, that's a good thing, right? And then the next step, if you're cutting them in half, right? Anything you do is going to improve your body and then going to improve your brain. But it takes time. It takes work. Yeah, I know. There's that nasty four-letter word again. God, it sucks, doesn't it? Avoid eating any fast foods. Those fast food places are just chunk full of everything you don't want, right? And as you get healthy, most people's taste buds begin to change. You will not crave all that crappy sugar stuff anymore. You will not crave all those bad fats. I'm telling you, you won't. It's going to take time. Your body has to recalibrate. You also need to recalibrate about how you think of the word comfort food. I mean, I'm from the South, so, you know, we all talk about, oh, we're going to have some comfort food, y'all. You know, I can make fun of it, okay? So, you know, I was in Savannah you know, for workshop dillies, and they were talking about all these, you know, comfort food places. And I'm just like, you know what comfort food is for me? Green vegetables. And I'm serious as a heart attack. My body loves that stuff. I look at, you know, dark green stuff and soups with green veggies in it, and I start salivating. I mean, seriously. You know, cakes and pies don't usually do it for me. I'm just looking at them and going, I know they're good, but they're so bad for you. It's like, why would I put that crap in my body? I wouldn't. You know, do I eat fried food occasionally? Yeah, right? But again, everything occasionally, everything in moderation. If you're going to eat bad stuff, don't eat it a lot, right? Get into a habit of good eating. Redefine what you classify as comfort food, right? Reclassify how you look at stuff. That's called cognitive restructuring. You're changing the things you say to yourself in your head, right? And again, practice it. Get used to doing it. Learn to cook. Learn to fix simple meals at home. It's not that hard, right? You're going to get much more bang for your buck, and you're going to be able to control portions. You're going to be able to control what you put in your mouth, what you put in your soups and casseroles, right? And if you're eating out a lot, ask them to box the entree before they bring it to you. Ask them to box half the entree up as a take-home doggy bag. Make two meals out of it if you tend to be an overeater, right? Unless you go to one of those frou-frou places, it gives you little teeny-ass, you know, portions anyway that, you know, a squirrel could barely eat. You know, box the stuff up. Most places give people way too much food. I mean, just way too much daggum food, right? So if you're going to eat carbs, as I said, eat the complex carbs, get away from the sugar, eat brown rice, bagels with, you know, complex stuff in them, unless you're gluten insensitive. But you really want to limit carbs. You know, everything in moderation. If you're going to get, you want to get protein, get it through plant sources more than you get it through red meat sources, right? Or protein shakes, and there's all kinds of stuff out there. Pick what works for you. Different situations work for different people. And when you start thinking of the word diet, don't think of it as some restrictive thing you're going to do for, you know, to get into your prom dress and then you're going to go back to eating normally. Because what your body's going to do is it's going to put on extra weight when you go back to eating normally if you're like most people, because the body thinks you were starving on a desert island when you were so-called dieting, quote unquote, right? And the body goes, okay, can't be doing that shit anymore. Got to store up for the next starvation, right? And that's why people put weight on when they go off these diets. Get a diet you can live with for life, because what diet really means is it's what your eating habits are and the food you put in your mouth. That's all it means. It doesn't mean it's going to be awful and terrible and terrible. You know, get rid of the full-fat stuff and switch to low-fat and no-fat stuff. But be careful when you do that, because sometimes the low-fat stuff and no-fat stuff tastes like ass, and I'd be lying if I said it didn't. And there are stuff that tastes good out there, trust me. But the other thing you got to watch out for, even more importantly, and I know taste is important, it is with me, is when they cut the fats out, they usually substitute a ton of sugar to compensate for the fat. So be very, very careful when you're looking at these labels. I cannot say read the label enough. I really cannot. That is key to eating correctly. Read the label. If the label doesn't have the calories and the percent content on there, if it doesn't have the ingredients and tells you how much of each ingredient is on there, put the damn thing back. Don't buy it. Packages that don't have ingredients on them, like some of these stores will make their own breads and pastries and stuff, and they're not required to label that stuff, or they'll put labels on there and they'll put has this, that, and the other, but they don't tell you how much of it's in there or what the caloric content is, the fat content is, or any kind of stuff. I don't buy it. That shit stays on the shelf, right? I am the food Nazi about that stuff. I just don't buy it, right? Because I don't know if it's got triglycerides fats in it or not, unless it says so, right? So be very, very careful. Read labels, educate yourself, get books on nutrition, talk to people who know and who are in the know. You can never know too much about this stuff. What you eat, you are, right? And I've said this before, and George Harrison said it long before I did and before I was aware of it, right? Savoy truffle, you know that what you eat, you are, and what is sweet now turns so sour, right? So, what you think is kind of funny lyrics turns out to be real truth in disguise, and you're going to find a lot of that in music, and that's one of the benefits I've had of being a musician is really listening to stuff and paying attention to that kind of stuff. So anyway, that's my shtick for tonight, and I've gone on way too long, and I apologize. On my next podcast, I'm going to be taking on a time-honored topic that I think a lot of people are going to be very unhappy with me about. So I'm warning you in advance, and this is, comes on the heels of a workshop I attended when I was at the convention. And I knew that, you know, that I would see some of this at the convention, but these guys and gals, they were nice and well-intentioned, but they were so into this, and they were giving so much information that was just bordering on complete misinformation that I just got uber pissed off about it. And I just can't stand it anymore. So I'm warning you, my next podcast is going to be on the 12 steps and the ridiculousness of the 12 steps and why addictions aren't diseases, never have been diseases, never will be diseases. Anybody who believes that stuff, and excuse my French, is a freaking moron. We've had plenty of evidence that that is not the case, right? Now, that doesn't give people license to use drugs, so don't mishear me, but this disease model concept is bogus as hell, and I'm about to debunk it on my next podcast. So if you're a guy or gal who's big into the 12 steps, you probably don't want to listen to the podcast, and that's cool. Pass me on that one, and I'll have another one out. Also, I'm going to be putting up part of my lecture on ADHD and addictions, biochemical stuff. My camera foobarred on me the second half, partly because I'm a moron with electronics. But I did catch the first hour and 10 minutes of the lecture. I missed the last hour and 15 minutes, so I apologize to everybody out there in podcast land. I've got my guys working on converting the video to post it on my site so folks can watch it. I am going to put my handout on there so folks will certainly be able to get the handout and view it. And if you want to do that, you're welcome to do that. And again, I apologize for not having the whole video. I really wanted to post that on the podcast, but I do have the first half. Thanks, everybody, a lot. Really, really appreciate it. And also want to let you know that I will soon be able to do long-distance coaching and consulting and counseling over the net. So stay tuned. Don't touch that dial. Later. Have a good one.